It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. It feels more and more like we are in workplaces that we are not trusting one another. We just don't know each other as well. We are all distributed. And there's kind of this fundamental component of work and relationships that isn't living up to its potential. And so today, I have experienced design lead Alicia Syriac with us, who has worked on some incredible programs for creatives at companies like Amazon and Adobe. And she's going to share a little bit about what she has, her opinion about kind of this state of play and how we might get beyond that using some of these practices, which she has spent her career focusing on. So Alicia, thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
So you have been in and around the design world for, is it your true, your almost your entire career?
Yes, absolutely.
So, and most recently you've been at your job exclusively at Amazon, and then before that at Adobe, was about, I don't know what we call it, like creative experiences or engagement design or something. Tell me about what your charter was.
Yeah, it was definitely about creating and cultivating creative culture. So at Adobe, what we did is sales enablement and really worked to have collaborative experiences on product development. So we would encourage people to play with our products, and we would do that in a learning environment and really celebrate a collaboration opportunity. And we did that inside companies for team development and at colleges for upskilling, as well as creative competitions during the pandemic, where we connected students with brands when nobody was getting any meetings. And then at Amazon, my job was to help stimulate the whole creative organization across all 5,000 designers and get them to participate and get to know each other across orgs when you're running a variety of, you have like every type of designer at Amazon. Yeah. And so our job was to like, how do you stitch that all together, celebrate their successes, get them to co-create across these dynamics, and really celebrate all the really cool shit that was happening at Amazon.
Yeah. What, I mean, so what is it about these programs? Like maybe we can start with, what are you trying to achieve? Like, what is the outcome here? And then Let's get into kind of how you think about creating these. Because what I want to do is get right at the heart of and help people, and I want to learn kind of, how do we create, make time, make space for these experiences when we just aren't in that, we don't have those opportunities. So let's start. What are you trying to get out of these? When you're thinking about creating some sort of collaborative engagement, what are you looking to achieve?
Yeah. So I think the first thing to keep in mind is that you're working with creatives. They are, for me, they're a very unique, special group of people who have certain ways that they want to be interacted with, heard, listened to, and engaged. And they come from a variety of backgrounds. So some like to read, sometimes like to show, some people like to talk. And so I actually think about the whole absorption period. And it's more like an event. I treat every experience like an intentional event. So when I think about the outcomes is like, okay, I want these creatives to learn this. And for example, is I want them to learn better empathy or design leadership skills. What are the ways that I need to go into that? And I map that backwards. A lot of human-centered design thinking goes into that. But how can I make sure that they are prepped, ready to go, have the right information going into it, that I do something fun? And I always set the stage with, this is not your normal work meeting. This is not your normal workspace. Like, let's take all of that baggage and move it to the side, because creatives, we feel from our bodies and our hearts and souls. So I spend a lot of time thinking about the intention I'm going with. How am I using your time most effectively? Do I need to do sprints? Do I want long periods where we're drawing and conversing? So I think about every interaction. I also want everyone to come out with something that they've learned from that experience, because I see creatives as very curious minds. And if you're not feeding that curiosity throughout the whole entire journey, they're out. Or I'm out.
Yes. I know. I have that. Yes.
Yeah. So like, how am I poking at that and bringing new things into the conversation that diversify the experience? And just pairing people up to get mixed. Like, I'm not interested in having an event where we're just like at a lecture and doing nothing, unless that's the whole point. But I want people to like interact with each other, come out with a feeling, because Maya Angelou has this really great quote, like, it's not about what you do, it's not about what you say, it's how you make people feel. And I believe that 110%, and particularly in creative environments, because we are emotional empaths who need to feel safe in order to move forward. Otherwise, we're just creating things that are redundant and, you know, similar to what we've done before.
I think most of the people that are in listening to this or tend to tune into this program are in the kind of human or experience or employee experience or human resources vein. So I know there's plenty of folks that do interact with creatives, but I wonder if you could describe what you think about, you know, how you approach this and how it might be the same or different, how you would approach this for creatives or beyond creatives. Like, let's say we wanted to create an experience that is going to engender trust or build some kind of cross-functional, you know, relationships. What are you going to change if these folks aren't inherently like the designery type?
Yeah, I don't think it really matters if you're, because everyone's creative, number one. So even if you are an accountant or in human resources, or if you're in legal, you're playing a creative lens to anything that you do. So I think it's more about zooming out, right? Like, what does your team need at this moment? And you design around that. If it's getting to know each other, the goal of the experience should be finding ways to be vulnerable so that you can make personal connections across the workplace. And I know that's really hard in virtual environments sometimes in distributed workforces, but use these opportunities to gather. And I think I'm going to segue for 1 second and then circle back around. I think it's important that you have intentional gatherings with your distributed workforces, because those in-person moments really create the synergy and the relationships that you can then go back out. So if you're developing culture, getting people together in person regularly is critical, but having them go back home to do their best work or out of the office is totally fine, because it's about communication. Mm-hmm. Back to your original question, though, about designing experiences for maybe non-creatives. Yeah, zooming out and finding out, like, what do we need to do at this moment in time, and being really succinct on that, and not trying to do too much with one thing. So if you have a summer engagement, right, like your summer team, summer annual summit or whatever, don't try to pile on 7 different outcomes. Really focus on 2 with a 3rd as a bonus, because otherwise you're going to get diluted messaging and diluted work cases across the way. So if the goal is to get people up to speed on the direction of the business, really focus on that, and then have ways for them to share back and get involved and get buy-in into it. So always have your audience take it down and interact with it and share it back out, so that that learning becomes part of their day-to-day versus them just like getting talked at the whole entire time.
Well, that's what I always feel like when I think about, like, it's great in the moment, but I walk away and maybe I'm inspired for a week. or maybe a month, but how do you, I mean, so the way, I'm going to anchor this back in like the challenge that we have today, which is we're not working together. We don't have the relationships. We don't have the trust. So when you're thinking about like taking away and viewing this as opposed to just kind of a quick hit of inspiration, which is what most of these events are, what have you done or seen that has worked to help people really kind of embed that, whatever it is that they're learning and taking away from this experience?
Yeah, I think you need to co-create with them and have them be champions afterwards, right? So bringing people into the planning process and having them own part of the event or part of the conversation inherently gets them to be champions later on, right? Because events and any experiences like this are not solo activities, they're team activities. And also, I feel like if you're the event facilitator, you're just one portion of it. You might not be the content expert. So have the people who are the content experts come in. And if you're bringing people up from the workforce, that creates like trust inside the team dynamic, right? Like, oh, my team member did that. They must be this. And so it allows them to go to each other to build trust. Mm. And I also believe like invite people in. We are at a moment, especially if you have a distributed workforce too, and people working all over the place, invite people in to collaborate with you. All you need to do is ask. 9 times out of 10, people will say yes. And if they say no, you're just in the same spot that you were before. No harm, no foul.
Yeah.
Right. And I think you need to have the courage to invite people in. And that's the only way that it's going to come together.
When you say invite people in, are you saying like, help me design the program? What else? Like, is there other ways that people can get involved? Because we're busy, right? You're like, how much time is that going to take? What are you asking of them, I guess?
Yeah. I want to give a really good example of how this happened at Amazon, because this was something I was really proud of. Every year we had an annual conference called Conflux. And when I came in, it was like 30 volunteers. Well, we scaled that up to over 200 within 2 years. And how we did that is we invited people in very time box experiences, right? So you could come in and help us with the theme. It's going to be a series of 4 sessions. You can work asynchronously and you could work with us. Like, it's having avenues for people to participate in whatever form they can show up. And that seems like a lot of work, but honestly, that's the way you're going to get all of these high value, very busy people to participate. And so we just did it like, okay, your job is to brainstorm on this, done. Brainstorm on this, done. And like move them through the project really distinctly so that everyone could say yes to this tiny little moment. Because if you're going to say, yes, I'm going to help you with a conference, that means like 8 months of what? Are you kidding? No way, man. I got 1 hour on Tuesday. Like, take it or leave it. And so that's how we move people through. And then we had opportunities for them to judge all the submissions. And that, again, like, you got 10 days. This is your box. Yes, no. Yeah. You know, creating redundancies. And that allowed us to move so many people into the experience, and it really created a very rich, audience driven for them dynamic that was, I was so proud at the end, because we had such diverse groups and we were able to cover almost every organization inside the opportunity, because we were able to open it up and keep it very short. And that's how you get people to come in, is you think through the exact thing that you want their feedback on, you get them in, you prep them, and get them out.
And what they come up with is probably useful and interesting, but it's almost beside the point.
Yeah.
What I hear you saying is, by engaging these folks before the event, during the event, and after the event, they are not only for themselves having that experience, like you said, the Maya Angelou quote, but they're also doing the thing that you're talking about, which is connecting with other folks. And they're also going to be able to, like you also said before, like spread the word, like, oh, look, my colleague is doing this. It's not just a, hey, show up on this day. Because the thing that I want, you know, it's like the thing I fear the most is someone shows up to a workshop and they're like, wait, what is this? Like, it's like, oh man, that is going to be really hard to kind of get you in the space. Like, you need to get people to really live in that moment and understand what they're coming in for, because the work starts before and continues after.
Yeah. And as an employee engagement focus, like, your job is to distill all that down and turn it back out to them, right? They're giving you all of the research and all of the knowledge that they want to see. And you, as the expert, right, in the field or the outcome that you're trying to achieve, can layer in the things that they might not be seeing, right? Yeah. So what I would do is, like, if there's speakers or themes or topics that they really want to reach, well, they might not be following all of the specific outlets that they need to. So, but if they're talking about trust or empathy, oh, well, I've read this and let's bring in this point of view so I can, like, push it, right? Because my job is to stimulate their thinking, regardless of who I'm talking to, because I want them mentally engaged throughout the experience. Otherwise, it's a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. The idea here that you need to have these, like, make the time for this, like, what is, so for someone, for a manager, team leader, or even a vice president that's listening in and says, okay, this is a great idea, but we just don't have the time. How do you make that case? Like, when you are, sometimes you're brought in, say that the program's already up and running and they're like, just make this better. But when you see an opportunity and make the case, what would you advise? So how would you advise someone to say, this is why it is worth your time? This is why we should invest in this.
Yeah, I think there's probably some signals from your team that would elevate this, right? Like, if you're having high churn or interpersonal dynamics that aren't working, or people are behind the eight ball in something, right? So there should be a very clear need told to you by your team dynamics, right? Mm-hmm. And the key is consistency more than it is around anything else, because you need to build the rituals and rhythms for your team to get to know each other and for them to trust the work, right? And so I think that, what would I tell someone? I would tell whoever it is who wants to bring it up to just pick one thing small and own it and do it really well. Mm. And this is a good example. I'm going to send a reading. And I think somebody else had on your podcast might have said this, like, Unreasonable Hospitality is a book that has come up to me, and it's about a restaurant, 11 Madison Park. And the front of house manager gives everybody the opportunity to own one small thing in the restaurant, like whether it be the coffee bar or the table setups or something like that. So they have ownership, but it brings this pride to the group that inherently distributes out, because everybody wants to own something and do it really well. That's what we're here for. Everybody wants a little tiny nugget. And sometimes we don't get the ability to shine because we're too mired in the workday. We're too mired in the business outcomes. And it should be a place where somebody can celebrate themselves, right? And so don't try to drive it to a business outcome, because you're never going to get it. But the reduction in churn, the trust between your teammates, the ability for your team to communicate and help each other is going to pay off in spades if you have a good team environment. And that 1 hour on a Thursday or 15, 20 minutes on a Wednesday is going to work, because you won't be turning people out over and over again. And that's my pitch on that one, because you want to like each other at the end of the day. You spend more time with your workplace family than you do your real family sometimes. And so, like, let's have a little bit of fun. We're here once in this lifetime. And sometimes I think we forget that.
Yeah, it does feel like swimming upstream, in that there's just a constant, like, drumbeat of, like, let's be productive, let's get it done. And that, I think, is has sort of mutated our expectations around what needs to happen at work. And, you know, I think, well, certainly I've been in the workforce long enough to remember when it was like, oh, let's do casual Friday or let's have a fun thing to do. And in that experience, it felt like, okay, great, we're sort of rewarding ourselves. It was an extra that, yeah, that just got kind of swept away. But now it feels like we need this even more.
Yeah. And I think it has to be intentional. And my personal point of view on it is it should be intentional, right? Like, you should have an outcome. You know, sometimes it's social, that's okay. But I'm really into learning and into curiosity. Mm-hmm. So what if you guys went down like some weird rabbit holes about like music or illustration or something that was just like a little off kilter that you could actually have a conversation around, right? And I think that's the thing that's unique to your team and getting to know them and like what's going to celebrate it. If everyone has a dog, maybe there's dog something that y'all do. If everyone's a coffee nerd, then there's a thing that y'all can do together. You just have to be creative to the people that you're talking to. And one of the best ways to get trust is to talk to your employees one-on-one and like let them share the weird in their life and not judge them for that and really listen. Because I've had managers who won't even give me a token thumbs up on a chat message, right? And they just talk at me and that's no fun. I don't trust them because they're not even listening. And then I've had other managers who are like, tell me all the things and I show up better for me. But in a good management situation, you're able to float and see what your team members need. Some need more emotional support. Some people just want like a list of items and that's what they thrive on. So I think it's attentive to a person because nobody's the same. And we all live in very different realities these days, particularly with how the algorithms all shape our experience, right? So you don't know what somebody else is experiencing on the other end. And I think that human empathy is important now more than ever because of the uniqueness of these realities. And so I just encourage you to like be creative with your teams, allow them to own it and let them try it. One of the things that I also see sometimes that really bothers me is managers will say like, go try it. And then they stop and then they pull it back. Or you don't even get into the second iteration of the thing before time has taken it away. So you don't even give the team the runway to experiment and learn and iterate. Let them iterate over time and trust that they're going to have the best intention because they're not here to really waste their time. They're here to do something with that time. And I think you really got to like support them in that. And that's how you're going to build the trust that's going to get them to invest more and have them be great leaders, but you got to let them try. And I hate the word fail, but like, see what happens. It may blow your mind or it doesn't work. And so what? You're neither here nor there. It really hasn't hurt anything.
I'm going to go a little off script because what you're describing to me is the antidote to the curse of efficiency. Or something like that. I read an article where it's like efficiency is like a false hope or something.
Yes. I agree.
Tell me your experience of that. Like I'm really curious because it really, when I read the piece, I was like, oh man, it unlocked a lot. And I'm just kind of pulling the threads. What does your brain say about that concept?
I think efficiency is a tough beast that we have gotten so wrapped up into. And I recently heard Michelle Lee from IDEO, she's the head of the Play Lab there, talk about adding more friction to our day-to-day and not like making things really hard, but like, for example, what if Google had a curiosity route instead of the direct route where you actually went and like you know, saw some roadside attractions on the way, rather than it giving you only the highway, right? Like, what if we took a little bit of a detour? And I think that's really, right now, we're moving so fast. It's hard to even absorb anything that we've read this morning and be able to share it out. So what if we took a little bit of a detour to ask what if, to challenge these assumptions, to look at it from a completely different point of view? Because what's the efficiency part is like, great, but to what end, right? What are we missing by rushing through the conversation? And I just read that if I only read the Cliff Notes, what am I missing of this incredible book? And I think AI is coming in hot for this as well, and how we do it and what are we actually missing from the Cliff Notes or the things. Yeah. But so how do you, and as like a person who manages employee involvement in employee culture, like you set the pace, right? You're setting the pace for your community and for people. Yeah. Do you, you're in charge of that. And I think there's an opportunity for all of us to lean in and say, this is when we move fast, but this is when we can move slow. And really letting us know, I mean, the seasons, it's, we're natural earthly being, right? Like there's these natural patterns where we, winter serves a purpose.
You are not an AI.
Yeah. Yeah. We need dormant times to rejuvenate instead of just like this constant thing. And that this is largely my own personal perspective on it, but we're humans and we go through transitions. And are we learning from each one of those moments? Because we have so much opportunity to learn at work, but are we really just pausing and reflecting on that?
Yeah.
That's what I hope that we can all bring to our cultures is like the care. And that's really the community of care comes in with our employees. As we, everything's going to change in 1 week from now, our conversation, something new is going to happen in the world. So what are we doing in the human side in the efficiency model? Because I get we need to move fast. That's fine. But we don't need to be rude and disrespectful to ourselves at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. I'm having an existential crisis as we're talking. Let's wrap it up. I'm going to ask you, what does success look like? So if we were able to imagine what an organization who does this well, who gives enough space for it, what might that look like? Like what, I don't know. Yeah. I'll leave the question open. I won't put any more criteria on it. What does success look like if we are able to embody these principles?
Yeah, I would say, number one, people touting to the world that they love working for your company, right? So what that means to me is you're having opportunities for them to learn and grow their careers. They're bettering themselves. There's opportunities for them to engage with peers outside their network or inside the organization, and regular celebrations of their work. Recognize your employees over and over again. It doesn't need to be for big things. It can just be for being a positive moment, or thank you for bringing this conversation forward. Whatever it is, like, celebrate your people as much as you can, all the work, reflect on that, and you're going to get all of that's just going to pay back in spades, because people are going to be so psyched to have an employer like you or a team member like you. And that sort of brand value, you can't pay for. It's so good.
Yeah. Whew. All right. Efficiency, creativity, a little bit of friction, rebuilding trust through incredible experiences, both distributed and in person. Alicia Syriac. You can find out more about Alicia at her website, aliciasyriac.com, but I'm going to spell it for you because Alicia is not spelled like it said. ELYSIASYRIAC.com is where you can learn more about Alicia and her work. It has been amazing. I'm already coming up with even more questions for the next time we talk. Thank you so much for coming on Great Mondays Radio. It has been mind expanding.
Awesome. I'm so happy to see you, and I can't wait to meet everyone on the flip side.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays, and you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.